Because the whole movie, the audience is trying to figure out, well, am I on LAPD side or am I on the Fast Fam side? And I think that prop was a good way of showing how elite the LAPD were and kind of villainizing them in a very subtle way.
Hi, welcome to another episode of CineNation Bad Movie Book Club. I am your host, Hunter Barcroft. That's the first time I've ever hosted the show without Brandon or Thomas, so bear with me, because we have two new voices on the show tonight. First off, Jack Blankenship. Jack, you want to introduce yourself?
Hey, everyone. I'm Jack Blankenship. I live and work in New York City, and I'm very proud to be CineNation's first New York correspondent.
Hey, and live from L.A., it's Alex Biscus. Alex, tell us about your beautiful Hawaiian self.
I don't know about beautiful, but I'm definitely, well, not Hawaiian, but from Hawaii. But yeah, out here in L.A., been out here for about a year and a half. Happy to be brought on CineNation for the first time. Yeah, this will be a good one. I'm excited.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time. So tonight, we're doing a Bad Movie Book Club episode about Fast and the Furious, the first installment of the Fast and Furious franchise, which is, a little unsung hero of the film industry right now. No one really knows about it. No one really watches them, but they're still making them for some reason. You want to give us a basic breakdown of the Fast and the Furious 1, Jack?
Yeah, absolutely. So this movie, The Fast and the Furious, not to get confused with the fourth the movie of the Fast and Furious franchise, Fast and Furious. This is not that movie.
God.
But yeah, that's such a confusing, confusing title. Yeah, just Fast and Furious.
Yeah. That, God, we're going to go into that later, but
yeah,
please.
But anyway, so The Fast and the Furious all takes place, and it all revolves around this one Los Angeles underground street racer, Dom Toretto. Now, Dom Toretto is what you would call a bigwig in the underground street racing game in Los Angeles. He has his family, he has his crew, which involves his sister and a couple of his friends from growing up, as well as the girl he's crushing on, who's named Letty. Now, Dom has a little bit of a past. When Dom was young, he saw his father pass away in a race, and he believed that there's this one man responsible for it. So he ends up beating him up with a wrench, and that kind of flags down the LAPD, and they're like, hey, we're going to put this guy in jail for a few years. After that, we're going to keep close tabs on Dom Toretto. So, enter agent Brian O'Connor, played by Paul Walker. Now, he's trying to infiltrate Dominic's crew, and by doing so with going to Dominic's garage/cafe restaurant where Dominic's sister works, Mia. And he's trying to, you know, hit on her and trying to kind of, like, infiltrate the gang through Mia. And he has a little bit of a brush-up with Dom's crew, which lets him secretly, unbeknownst to Dom and his crew's knowledge, work as an undercover police officer and try to figure out what his crew is trafficking around town. However, what Brian learns is that there's another gang in Los Angeles, which is doing all sorts of looting and bad things. And he eventually works with Dom to try to take down this street racing gang.
He joins the family.
He does, but here's the thing. You don't know if he's really in the family or if he's, you know, doing the dirty work for the LAPD.
The other
and
family.
That's where
he can't, that's, yeah. Such a twist, though. Such a
man
twist.
Man with two families.
You know what, though? It reminds me a lot of the movie Point Break. And
really?
Yeah, it's... I feel like this is a common... I didn't know that it was a common, like, idea that everyone shared, that basically this is a cop-out of Point Break. But the more... Like, I got online and I Googled it just because I was curious. And sure enough, forum.bodybuilding.com has a great breakdown of it from a registered username, Click Here. And I know, Alex, you're a big fan of forum.bodybuilding.com.
Love that forum.
You go to it often?
Oh, yeah. At least twice a day.
Is it on your bookmarks?
Yes. It says on my bookmark. I actually have a special browser open up to go straight to that on my desktop. So open that up. So that and forum.carpets.com. I just like to browse carpets every now and then.
Incognito mode, bro. That's all I use it for.
Just to look at carpets and bodybuilding.
Hey, man.
Well, this user has a rating of 4 out of 10 power reps. He's clearly knows what he's talking about. He's awesome. Like Jack said earlier, he's somewhat reliable. So somewhat. Basically, here's a basic idea of the plot breakdown. He said, undercover police officer Brian O'Connor must delve into Los Angeles's exotic street racing subculture to crack a ring of daring hijackers. Point Break. Undercover FBI agent Johnny Utah must delve into Los Angeles's exotic surfing subculture to crack a ring of daring bank robbers, the ex-presidents. It's just off the bat, it's the same movie. But then he goes into this whole thing about how when Brian falls for Mia, it's very much of like a, she's wary because she doesn't really know him, and like that's how he kind of gets introduced into this, the family, Dom's family. But then in Point Break, Johnny Utah falls for the waitress, Tyler, the ex-lover of the mysterious and charismatic Bodie, Patrick Swayze. And Bodie's initially wary of their relationship, just like Dom is wary of Paul Walker being with Mia. Like,
it's such an easy storyline to copy off of, you know? I mean, like, the two subcultures, like, in Los Angeles, like, I just throw a sister who will also be a lover, or, you know, like, a sister or a person that the main guy is close to that the new guy will fall in love with to make some conflict. It's almost too easy.
I have a question for you guys later that comes back. It circles back to this exact question, and we'll go into it later on. But, basically, I just wanted to know what, Alex, can you tell me, like, when you first watched the movie, what's the first thing you... Like, what's the first thing you took away from it?
Well, the first thing that's funny is the Point Break reference. You know, that immediately I took, just because, you know, I'm a fan of both movies, and I like the idea of extreme sport subcultures and, like, the idea of a guy going undercover. So I immediately kind of thought of that and that. And then just, like, you know, how young everyone looks. You know, this was 16 years ago in 2001. So, you know... The big one is Vin Diesel. You think of him, and he's kind of like a grizzly old veteran now. Back then, he was this young, ripped, yoked, jack, whatever you want to call it, guy on the scene. And so I thought that was funny. And then also, I'd like to go into the character of Vince. He was one of Dom's best buddies in the group, and he really didn't like O'Connor coming in. He did not like Paul Walker's character, and I think my big takeaway from seeing that was, I feel like every line and every scene he was angry and didn't want O'Connor to be there and expressed that in some kind of way. And so I thought, you know, it completely put his character in a bubble and just was just very simple. And I was like, all right, well, if that's all this is gonna be, just let that go.
But that's like the perfect metaphor for this whole thing. Like, basically everyone except for Vin Diesel and Paul Walker only really have one thing that they're really concerned about. Like, you can argue maybe like Michelle Rodriguez has more going on. Jordana Brewster, for the most part, I feel like she's pretty... I would say...
There's some little more going on there. You know, there's this... You know, because she's his sister. She's Vin Diesel's sister. She, you know, you have that. And then you can't... I mean, you know she likes Paul... I think you see her affection for Paul Walker's character kind of develop over, you know, the movie. So you have a little bit of, I guess, those two things.
Yeah, and I that's one of the things that I also took away was, besides the, like, really bad style that, like, very much contrasts to, like, the, you know, sleek, clean, like, brand new stuff of the newer Fast and Furious movies, mm-hmm. The one thing that I took away was, there's more acting, like, there's more ask of some of the actors. Like, Vin Diesel in this movie, and I was talking to Jack about this earlier, shows more, like, range than he ever does later on. Like, this is the most we've seen from Vin Diesel in a long time. And that's sad, but...
This is peak Diesel.
peak Diesel. Can we rename the episode Peak Diesel?
I like that. Hey, let's do it.
Oh, man, that... That's my new favorite terminology. That should be a thing. But anyways, Jack, what was your first thing you took away from this?
Oh, well, this is pretty embarrassing, but my first Fast and Furious movie was not The Fast and the Furious. It was actually Fast 5. And so I watched Fast 5 a few years ago, and I loved it. And I was like, okay, I need to get more of this in my life. So I watched the Fast and the Furious. And I'll tell you, I finished the movie, but at the time, I was not happy about it. Like, it was a lot of very weird, stylized things about it. A lot of, like, the plot kind of towards the end, like, rushes a lot. But what I've kind of come to learn since I've become more and more of a fan of the Fast and Furious franchise is that with each movie that comes out, this one just becomes, like, a little bit less of the storyline. So it's not that much of a... Not that much is asked of it as more and more movies come out. But, I love it. You know, I mean, like, I say I love The Fast and Furious, but that's mainly just for, like, the nostalgia factor of seeing all my favorite characters when they're, like... It's like seeing their home videos.
You're seeing the start of the family.
Yeah, you're seeing the family kind of come together for the first time. And they bond over everything. They bond over Fred Durst music, Ja Rule...
Dude, Ja Rule is one of the greatest parts of this movie by far.
Yeah, they love themselves some Ja Rule. They really do.
Ja Rule's lines in this movie, probably the best lines of the movie.
Oh, no, absolutely.
God.
Like, Ja Rule takes this movie over for one of the lesser tiered actors in this movie. I think Ja Rule gets my star.
I feel like they took the success that people had from Ja Rule's performance, and they were like, we have to cast... like another rapper. So they followed it up with Ludacris.
Yeah, and then Ludacris just, man, Chris Bridges, a.k.a. Tej. I won't spoil too fast for you guys, but hey, you know what you do.
You could say it's too stuff. Fast for them, man.
Yeah, it says too fast, maybe too furious. Yeah.
Too fast for you.
But, you know, but I think my favorite thing about this movie is that there's just so many, like, just ridiculous moments, like, back to back to back to back. And, I think one of the most ridiculous things happens towards the end of the movie. We kind of brushed over this, but there's this event that Dom's crew loves to go to called Race Wars, which is a very alarming thing that you'd probably hear on, like, CNN now more than, like, any other time. But anyway, Race Wars is this big, like, weird festival in the desert.
It didn't seem like that weird of a term at the time. I just want to say
it's
that.
It's the Burning Man of racing festivals.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, it's like this burnt, like everyone kind of comes out there. I'm like, you know, Burning Man, they barter, like, they don't have money or currency, but they barter, like, oh, I have, like, 12 rolls of toilet paper. Can you give me, like, 17 fish tacos? So I imagine they're doing the same with, like, hey, I got, like, a spare tire. Hey, can you give me, you know... some gasoline. I'm sure it's just like a wild currency system out there. But anyway, at Race Wars, one of the youngins in Dom's crew bets his car against this driver from the rival gang. And he ends up, like, getting smoked in the race. Like what an idiot. Like, I can't believe, like Dom allowed for him to, like, race in the first place. Because this guy's just a total just noob. Anyway, so a few scenes later, he's on the run from these people, and he shows up to Dom's house. And they're like, hey, I don't even know this kid's name. Let's call him Tyler. They're like, hey, Tyler, we missed you. Like, why'd you run? Why'd you bet your car? He goes, this is all I got, man. This is all I got. And they're kind of having this loud confrontation. And then out of nowhere, we find out that Dom Toretto has super senses. Because they're like, in the faint noise of the speaker, you hear like a motorcycle zoom in. And they give this profile shot of Dom Toretto and this quick zoom in. And he, like, turns his head, and then these the rival gang members show up and shoot the kid on the front lawn. And the Dom knew about it, like, seconds before, and didn't warn anyone. I thought that was pretty wild.
Yeah, that's a great point, actually. It's almost like he wanted that kid to die. He's like, no, you made a terrible mistake. Now you must pay with your life. Like, that's so true.
I can't give him, like, this car.
You get demerit. God, I didn't even think about that. Alex, what ridiculous moment did you come away with?
Okay, well, I guess probably the most ridiculous moment, I think, was how they introduce Brian O'Connor as a cop. And so they take you to this cop hideaway, and it's at this like beautiful mansion in the middle of the Hollywood Hills. And I'm like, how good do these guys have it? That they're like, I feel like they're it's not, and I doubt it's even close to where any of these racers or this gang lives. Like, it's in some,
oh no,
it's like, why don't you just take an apartment or like a house that's some that, you know, probably didn't go into that much of the LAPD's budget or FBI, you know, of the budget, and has a huge, super nice pool and like great breezeways. And I was like, you know, I thought, kept thinking like, well, the Property Brothers would do wonders with this, you know? So it's, but, it's just like, I just saw that. I was like, in what world is that realistic where the Hideaway, you know, and I don't even know how big of an operation of an investigation this was, but they, you know, they brought everybody in for this. And so they made it seem like a very, very important investigation.
And that's what my most ridiculous thing was basically at the beginning, we're introduced to what is essentially people stealing TVs and like VCRs and DVD player combos. And that is a catalyst to launch a giant operation to take down something that honestly was probably, it could have been handled by like local police officers, but we get basically the entire FBI involved. With taking him down, like, to me, I just felt like that was so ridiculous. But like, I know it turns into more than that later. There's a lot of stuff going down we don't know about. But initially, like that is literally why these people are there, to try to figure out why these things are getting taken. Like, we're here to stop the guys from hijacking stuff on the road. But like, you don't need that many people to do it. Like, I've seen Sicario, okay? I know how many people it takes to take down the drug cartel, and it's one. You just need Benicio Del Toro. But, I mean, that's really what this movie was lacking, was, you know, Sicario cartel hitman that could have solved this by himself. But maybe that's Fast 9 at this rate. You know,
hey,
maybe.
You can only dream, and it's not out of the realm of possibilities, because there is no realm of possibilities. It's everything's possible.
Yeah, no.
But no, I'm glad we brought up that scene where they're all the FBI and the police and just everybody is at this like stakeout.
Everyone.
At the like Los Angeles equivalent of Jay Gatsby's house. Just this ridiculous mansion. And like, and this brings up like what I thought was like my favorite prop from the whole movie, or what I like to call the MVP, most valuable prop, is at one point, to kind of like show how ridiculous the LAPD and the FBI are being. They're talking to Agent Brown O'Connor, and they kind of turn to each other, and go, "Hey, you want a frap?" And I was like, "Wait, what?" And because I thought that fraps were invented like 6 years later, because I had never like imagined them in the 2001 era. I just imagined them in like the Starbucks everywhere era. And so then the next scene, they're sitting down on couches just drinking fraps, and they're like, "All right, well, how are we gonna take down Toretto?" Like, sips like this whipped cream like frozen drink, and I thought that was like just so ridiculous. And I've always had this feeling that like, I've never understood why Starbucks sells frappuccinos. Because I feel like Starbucks has such like this weird like business operation and everything, and you know, I used to intern for like a bunch of things, and I would go and get coffee for people, and like I never had to get a frappuccino, but I would imagine if I was like a boss and I was like trying to fire somebody, and having like a frappuccino on my desk would be like the most counterproductive thing, because it's pretty much just like a sillier version of a milkshake. And so I don't understand how these people can be like, "Oh yeah, we're gonna like hit Toretto right where it hurts. We know once we kind of surround the place, just like get out your guns and just like take them down. Could you put some more cinnamon sprinkles on my frappuccino, please, ma'am?" And I thought that was just like the most ridiculous thing. And I think that prop did a good job of showing how, because the whole movie, the audience is trying to figure out, well, am I on LAPD side or am I on the Fast Fam side? And I think that prop was a good way of showing how elite the LAPD were and kind of villainizing them in a very subtle way. That's why that prop is my most valuable prop.
That's a very great point, and I never picked up on that, but yeah, I mean, that. I wonder if it's a product placement thing, or if they're just like, "Oh no, man, they're going to be hanging out in the Hollywood Hills, drinking their frappuccinos, like, they don't know what it's like on the streets. Only Paul Walker knows."
Oh no, not yet, man. No, the product placement in this movie was with the Pizza Hut ad, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, but that's like one of my favorite things.
Dude, if you want to go into it now, please.
Oh yeah, well, there at one point, one of the first street races of the movie, the whole street racing community kind of like borders off like this part of Los Angeles, like I guess like thousands and thousands of cars, and it got to the point where a pizza delivery man with a Pizza Hut thing on top of his car was he drives up and he goes, "Hey," and then they're like, "We have a street race," and he goes, "Gosh dang street racers," and he like just backs up and drives off. And it was totally unnecessary, but it was such a great three line scene. And like I was like, at that point I made a little note. I was like, all right, I'm gonna do a counter of how many brands they have in this movie. And then after that there was like almost none. So
that like you, I mean, honestly, I would like to know how much they got from that product placement, because it has to be an astronomical amount.
Absolutely.
And now, especially with how big it's gotten, and with all this, you know, I mean, you turn on TNT or USA, and 9 times out of 10, it's going to be Fast and Furious.
It's always going to be Tokyo Drift, the one no one likes to watch, but still watches anyways. my most valuable prop, it's not, I guess technically it's not a physical object, but to me, okay, the most ridiculous thing was NOS or nitrous. Like
that makes them go.
Like, it is beyond ridiculous. It almost looks like they're going into like hyperspeed. Like they're in Millennium Falcon. They're just like throw it down. Like it looks so dumb. Like, but in a sense though, it's almost like magical. I'm like, yeah. Like I don't know anything about street racing. Like maybe this is legit. Like how this is. But to me, it just came across as so silly. Like, they're like, it's a close race. All of a sudden, you push this button, and you're just going to, like, rocket ship your way to the finish line. Like, it was just silly how that was. But at the same time, like, I've never street raced. I don't know anything about it. Maybe that's what it's really like. I don't know. Yeah. So,
well, I was confused with the NOS, because at the very first, it seems like using NOS is, like, cheating, because, like, they have it, like, hidden under all these things, and they try to keep it, like, all secret. So I was really confused, like, is using NOS, like, cheating? And they never really, like, clear that up, because it's made to seem like it's, like they're smuggling, like, drugs or something.
If you don't know what it is, you can't afford it. And if you can't afford it, you ain't gonna win. I feel like that's, like, the mentality with it. Wait, did anyone address that in the beginning, Brian O'Connor, like, basically, I don't know, like, not stole, but, like, unfairly took the NOS from that place he was working to put in his car and street race and then lose, and then he never gave the NOS back to his, like, the guy that he was working for.
That's a great point.
But obviously the guy he was working for wouldn't care because he was, like, in with the LAPD or the FBI, you know, with helping him out with that job. So he could get away with that. But I feel like no one really was like, oh, you totally lost all this stuff, which you shouldn't have had in the first place. That's okay.
Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't understand how the guy who owns the store, because at one point, Dom, he's like, hey, you don't work at that shop anymore, when they first have that encounter.
Right.
And Brian goes back to the store, and he's like, oh, man, like, Dom, you know, he really wants me to fire you. So I'm assuming that, like, Dom has, like, kind of, like, launders money. I'm taking this way too far, but I think that he launders money through all these, like, chain restaurants and chain franchises all throughout Los Angeles.
I mean, yeah.
And so, like, kind of like Walter White, a la Breaking Bad.
I mean,
But it was weird because
I don't think there's a such thing as taking Fast and Furious too far. And I think, considering the way that the rest of the franchise goes, him laundering money is not that big of a deal. Like, it's probably, that's exactly what's
going
on.
But it's also weird that, like, the same guy is also, like, indebted to the LAPD, which is why he's taking on O'Connor as an employee. That's something else that was a little screwy with it.
Yeah, that's you guys are pointing out so many good things that I just clearly missed in my viewing of this movie before getting prepped for this.
And to your credit, they don't give you a lot of, like, setup to really, you know, there's not a lot of big, like, you know, Donnie Darko, whoa, thinking moments. It's kind of like,
that's true.
This is just what it is. It's simple. Take it as it is.
That's a really great point. What's your most ridiculous moment, Alex?
Or,
your most valuable prop. What's your most valuable prop?
I was going back and forth between two. But I think my, and you, well, you mentioned it before when we were talking about, you know, setting up this podcast, was the Coronas. right? I mean, and with me, that's the reason that's most valuable and most important is because, you know, with any big friend group and, you know, the crazy things you do, you know, nothing better than hanging out and having a couple brews. Yeah. And you always have to have your favorites, right? You know, and of course, like in LA, and you know, they're, and I get, I mean, with the last name like Toretto, you know, and I feel like they're Italian, but then it had a very, you know, Southern California, LA, like Latino vibe.
Hispanic, kind of thing.
Yeah, Hispanic vibe, you know, so I get that they like chill back with some Coronas, and hey man, I never wanted a Corona more than I did at that moment. Probably just a little bit less than I wanted Pizza Hut.
Like the Coronas that carries over into almost every other Fast and the Furious movie. Like, I'm pretty sure they drink Coronas in every Fast and Furious movie, because I know the most recent one, like, they go into the little workshop area, not to spoil anything, but when they go into like Kurt Russell's secret workshop, like car manufacturing place, there's just buckets of iced down Coronas everywhere. Like, there's toolboxes.
Oh yeah, man.
Buckets of Coronas. So he's like, oh yeah, don't mind if you do. Just like help yourself. It's all yours.
There aren't gigantic ice buckets of Coronas in any other warehouse or garage you go into.
I mean, I wish that would make my visit to get my oil change much more interesting and enjoyable. But yeah, I mean, it stands out. And like when I first saw it in this, yeah, it definitely was like, oh wow, this is like a thing that's been going on.
Can
for
I throw
years.
Out one more that I just that like I had also?
No, please do.
Just the beginning, like when we were talking about the, you know, when Brian first comes up, he goes up and flirts with Mia in this cafe / you know, auto garage, and he orders, isn't it a tuna sandwich?
Yeah.
Yes.
I feel like that, first of all, that's the sandwich that started it all. But that wouldn't, why tuna? Like, I guess they just want to choose some like crappy thing that he would... that, you know, what no one would ever order at a cafe. But, like, if I'm going to some, like, cafe in the middle of, like, I guess kind of the middle of a neighborhood, it looked like, I'm not ordering
fish. In the middle of an oil, like...
That's true. But, I mean, you're from Hawaii. Like, in Hawaii, people go up and order, like, a Spam and Egg sandwich. That's way worse than tuna. Like...
Yeah, I know, but I don't know, man. I'm so sketched out by fish. But, you know, back in 2001, there wasn't a nuclear blast in Japan, so I guess they don't have that to worry about.
That's true.
God, yeah, that sandwich did start it all. And that brings us back to a point that, Jack, we were talking about earlier, the cafe garage. Like, how ridiculous is that?
So ridiculous. And I also want to add that there's, like, every other scene in this movie, they're eating food. They're, like, at a diner sometimes. Well, they start off with at Mia's, and then they later go to that diner, like, in the middle of, like, off the highway. And there's so many diner scenes in this movie.
Yeah. It would have been a really hard movie for prop people to do only because of how prop heavy it was. And like, a lot of people don't understand that any kind of food scene is props guys. Like, there's not like a specific like, oh, you're food people. Like, props hires out food people generally, but a lot of the time it's just the prop crew. Like, that stuff's hard. And like, what you don't understand is like, Paul Walker probably ate like 12 tuna sandwiches during that one take, like that one scene. Like, the dude probably was cranking down tuna sandwiches like it was nothing. They're probably like, what food do you absolutely not hate and you could eat all day? He's like, tuna sandwich. He's like, oh, great, tuna sandwich. It's going to be a tuna sandwich. So, like, in a way, I feel bad for Paul Walker because he ate God only knows how many tuna sandwiches. But at the same time, like, think about everyone else in this movie, because you're right, they eat all the time. Like, those people were like gorging themselves all the time. But, I wanted to talk about, to just change it up a little bit, I wanted to talk about how this movie holds up, because you can't talk about the Fast and the Furious without talking about the phenomenon, like the cultural behemoth that this franchise has become. And how do you guys think that this movie, you know, holds up in the franchise? And honestly, like, looking back on it, I'll go into it again, like, I think this is probably the best acting we've had out of Vin Diesel in one of these movies. Like, there's more asked of him in this movie, in my opinion, just to show like, oh, like, you gotta be, you know, like, sentimental, but also like, you care about your family, but also you're like, you're a bad guy, so like, you gotta be like hard, you know, like, you always just gotta be like tough. But I just feel like he is given more to do in this movie, and in recent movies it's more like, oh, you're gonna fight Jason Statham, oh, you're gonna drive fast and like jump this car from one building to another building. And like, to me, I feel like it's just, it's more grounded in reality compared to now, where like you're seeing the Fast 8 Fate of the Furious trailer and they're fighting a submarine with cars. So like, yeah. Where do you, like, to me, that's kind of what I took away from it. Alex, what do you take away from it?
Well, you know, what you were talking about there was like just the effect of special effects, you know? And it's like when, with this, you know, they didn't have that as much. You know, the budget, what I was really interested in looking at was the budget for this movie was $38 million. The budget for Furious 7 was $190 million.
Whew.
So like the difference in how much they're relying off of, you know, special effects versus the actual story and the acting to carry it forward. I think that's the big difference you saw there. So what's the exact question? The big takeaway from
the exact question movie? Is how does this movie relate to the franchise as a whole? Like when you look at it as a singular piece compared to the rest.
Oh, right. Yeah, well, I think it is. I think it's a good building block. I do. You know, you don't want anything to start too ridiculous to end ridiculous. You know, but I don't even know when they, because you know, this movie was, you know, an underground kind of subculture based off an article. You know, that's really what it was based. It was based on an article mm-hmm. of racing. You know, no one really, I think, expected to blow up this big, and I think that because it was, you know, they had the two moments where the one car went under the semi truck, you know, and that was kind of the big moment there. Now they've led up to, driving cars through the air and submarines and all the other crazy stuff. So I think what really makes it good lead in is just how, I hate to say basic, but like, you know, it's not as crazy as the other ones are. You know, it's a good starting point. It's a good grounded point.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think 100%. Jack, what do you think?
Yeah, well, throughout this whole movie, I mean, like I said earlier, the first time I saw it, I wasn't really blown away by it. But, you know, I was watching it recently, and I noticed that there's like this really, there's a great sequence that happens where Brian O'Connor reveals himself to Mia that he's an undercover agent, and he knows that they're coming after Dom, and he warns her. And then that whole sequence is followed by this sequence of Dom and his whole crew trying to rob this TV truck to get back at the other gang members. And they go down this highway. The truck driver that they're trying to rob like has like the shotgun, and he's like shooting at them and everything. And there's just like, it's very ridiculous, but it's like a very, it kind of foreshadows like a lot of the cool things about the Fast and Furious movies. Because there's, like, at one point, like, Paul Walker just is like, hey, I'm going to get on top of this car and, like, try to just, like, jump off and get on the truck, which is, like, the craziest thing that happens. But in every single Fast and Furious movie since, they always just, like, get, like, even when they're driving in the car, they'll be like, all right, I'm going to get on top of the car. And they get on top of the car somehow, like, just keeps driving itself. And as you see a lot of these things and these stunts kind of repeat themselves over and over, and It's really cool, like, how, like, organically this one was shot and how, you know, it was a really well-done, like, action sequence and everything. And then, like, the following scene, Dom confronts Agent O'Connor about his police ties. And then the moment that took me out of it was when that kid shows up and Dom has, like, the super hearing moment. And then they go by and just blast this kid. And so but for those, like, 20 minutes, I was very, like, optimistic. I was like, you know what? Like this is kind of like the best part of the movie that they translated to like seven other movies. And so I was like, you know what? Like you kind of have to respect that they're able to kind of find this really gem of a moment in that movie and make it kind of like their mantra of the whole franchise. And I thought that was a really, really cool moment. And a really, like really cool scene that kind of like does a lot of foreshadowing with Fast and Furious. But I will say, the very first shot, the Fast and Furious, is like a kind of a dolly out of a truck loaded with all these combo like DVD and VCR players, like a VCR TV combo thing, and so it's pretty crazy that like that was their first mission, is trying to steal these things and loot them, but in the seventh movie they're like trying to prevent global terrorism, so it's like. It's the wildest thing to think that those two things can be like related, but they made it work all because of that one scene.
VCRs and DVD players were a gateway drug for them.
Mm-hmm.
It only led to bigger and better black market goods. Yeah, I think all in all, I think that's pretty accurate and like a good way to, you know, close it up about, you know, in regards to how this falls into place with all the other ones. And, you know, I hope we do episodes for all the other ones because I feel like they definitely earned the right to be Bad Movie Book Club and Duffy's.
100%. And I, you know, with Tokyo Drift, you know, even going all the way to Furious 7, I just think Tokyo Drift is so interesting because it doesn't fit in really with any of the other ones, and no one really, it's just that complete outlier. And I just think that one, that's just, if we do more, I can't wait for that one.
Dude, I completely agree. I have one thing to ask you guys before we go to wrap
us up.
If you, so in honor of this, of our love for this movie, if you could pick one other LA subculture to give its own Fast and the Furious / Point Break, like movie franchise, what subculture would it be and why?
Okay, well, this is a little bit of a, this is close to home for me, but I think it would be really fun to have a Fast and Furious type movie with like the Fish Taco Game in Los Angeles. And there's these rival like fish taco places, and like the health inspector, there's like a rogue health inspector that's undercover at these fish taco stands, and it all happens like in Venice Beach, and they like they rally like a lot of the performers out there, and they choose their sides on which fish taco place is the best. And then, as you know, the movie goes on, you know, some little boy bet a shrimp taco that he could beat the other one in a cook-off, and then he wouldn't give up the shrimp taco, so they just shot him. So I think that would be a really good franchise, Universal, if you're listening.
He brings his dad's fish taco to the thing, and he's going to be like, oh no, I'm going to lose my dad's fish taco forever because I lost the competition.
You can make it deeper, not just the fish taco, the recipe.
Ooh, oh yeah. You know what though? Like, I could actually see this being some kind of weird Disney movie. So I don't like this isn't out of the realm of possibility. Alex, what's your subculture? What are you gonna go with?
Man, it's funny. It's like this is tough for me, even though I live here. I wish I could look outside. I would have to say, man, driving. I don't know, Hunter. Hunter, how about you go first?
And I've got two. All right, maybe it'll inspire you. Okay, so if I had to pick two, I would definitely say number one, mine would be the people who dress up in superhero costumes on the side of the street. I would 100% give them their own franchise because you could have all these different people from all these different like universes. Like you could have like Marvel people and DC people and just like random ass people dressed up, and they could have their own subculture about like, I don't know, someone. They go to like a, I don't know, maybe they go to Comic-Con and something goes down at like one of the, cosplay, like party, like cosplay competitions. It could basically be like a giant thing about cosplay.
Oh yeah.
And so the whole thing goes down about like, you stole my cosplay idea, you bastard. And they go into this huge war between cosplayers. I think it would be hilarious. But if I didn't do that, I would say the underground magic scene and like the magic castle.
Ooh.
That would be a great movie. It would be fantastic. I would watch that at a theater. If they made a movie like this about people that worked at Magic Castle and about like underground magic community and magician community in LA, like street performers, sign me up in a heartbeat. I'm down. You have to make it ridiculous though. Like it has to be like David Blaine, Chris Angel, Mind Freak, like ridiculous.
You're talking about the incredible Burt Wonderstone, bro.
I feel like that's definitely be a plot of a movie. That's
could awesome. Be a secret tie-in to this universe. Maybe the movie is a part of the Fast and Furious universe.
We have an extended Burt Wonderstone universe. I like that.
Alex, you have to come up with something. You have to give us something for a subculture.
Oh my gosh. Okay, all right. So you guys are going everywhere. Magicians, street performers, I'm trying to think of food. I mean, one thing you obviously put with, you know, LA is driving and streets. But then one thing people really have a problem with here is parking. And I feel like if there's some like underground world of like parking attendants and like parking spots and then the people that create like parking garages and where to put them and like and just like someone in this someone is just it's not even that they're a cop, they're just so pissed off that how terrible parking is here that they try to infiltrate, you know, they try to infiltrate like the parking office and try to figure out a way to make it easier for everyone and save the day. And then but then of course Uber and Lyft are going to get pissed off at everybody. That's the sequel.
That honestly, that is such an easy tie-in to this universe that you could make that. You know how like Marvel's doing the like the people, it's like the people on the street who are watching all this stuff go down, like TV show, like people are innocent bystanders. Like you could totally make a TV show about people that are innocent bystanders to all the street racing and craziness going down, and they're just like, this is weird, right? Like they're bombing, like they're bombing the city. Jason Statham is shooting at The Rock. But The Rock hangs a bag of grenades off of his helicopter right in front of me and then blows it up with a Gatling gun with his bare hands. Like, you could make a movie based in the same world.
But where do they park their car? Where do they park their car?
You're right. It could be about all the parking tickets that Dom Toretto has had.
Ooh, the valets are the family.
Yeah.
Dude, we've been
parking cars for generations.
Oh, that's amazing. I think that's we're gonna have to wrap it out on that because it's
I like that.
It's a good way to go out. Yeah, you guys, thanks for following along with us. If you're still here, anyone that's listening to this episode, we really appreciate it, and we hope you guys had a good time. Hopefully, we'll be back soon with another episode of Bad Movie Book Club. You'll hear us at some point soon, whether or not it's Bad Movie Book Club or on the regular CineNation Mothership show. But anyways, thanks for listening. I'm Hunter. And
I'm Jack.
I'm Alex.
And we had a really good time, and we'll see you later. Bye.